Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and Al-Ateen present the 1995 International Convention. AA Everywhere, Anywhere, held June 29th to July 2nd in San Diego, California.
It's Phyllis Masbach. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm currently serving part-time, temporarily, at your general service office. I had the pleasure of serving for 15 years back in the 70s and 80s, and I retired. And about 2 years ago, they called and asked me if I'd come back on this part-time basis so that the people who were really working there could do all the work that was necessary to make this such a great success. So I've been sort of filling in the cracks for the last couple of years. It's wonderful to see so many of you here. We've got a great meeting planned. I just want to say in introduction that the warranties are sort of the service part. We speak of recovery, unity, and service. We all know recovery is our program, our personal program, and the traditions provide the unity. And I like to think that the warranties describe for us how we can keep all together and provide the service that is necessary to fulfill the third legacy. If everyone is here, may we have a moment of silence and remember those who have gone before and think about those of us who are still out there in the dark. Now let's get on with our meeting on the warranties. Our first speaker is a man whom I met first back in the early 70s. He's a wonderful AA member and has been for many, many years. And I am proud and privileged to introduce to you Eric from Washington.
My name's Eric. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Steamboat Island group in Olympia, Washington. The greatest group in the universe. And I hope you all feel the same way about your group. My sobriety date is December the 24th. That's Christmas Eve, 1951. The warranties of Article 12, and maybe after we've gone a little ways, you'll understand what Article 12 is. The warrant and what... Is that better? Can you hear me? Okay. The warranties of Article 12 of the General Service Conference Charter undertake to guarantee that the General Service Conference will always conform to the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, that should be enough to tell you about the warranties, and I should be able to sit down. But I'm not going to. AA, the Article 12 of the General Service Conference Charter is often called the AA Service Bill of Rights because what it does, it makes us feel the freedom and know the freedom that we have in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and all the things that are good in AA. And it's through that that we call it the AA Service Bill of Rights. And to give you a little background, incidentally, none of us who are on the platform today compared notes in advance as to what we're going to talk about. And I determined that when, no matter whether I went first, second, or third, I would still talk about the warranties, six warranties, at least mention them by name, but not all in detail. And I originally wrote a speech. And when I wrote the speech out, What I was doing actually was just taking a lot of Bill stuff from Concept 12 of AA, and then my friend Curtis, who's my sponsor, one of my local sponsors in Olympia, told me, he said, where is Eric in all this? And actually, it wouldn't be fair to you if I just went through the drill that you can read right out of the service manual and the 12 concepts of AA. So I thought I would try to give you just a little bit about my personal knowledge and the personal things that have happened to me over the year that ties in to the warranties. On April the 1st, excuse me, in April of 1951, the first General Service Conference meeting was held in New York City. Actually, the preparation for the General Service Conference started in the mid-40s when Bill was dreaming up some way that they could turn everything over to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And many of you don't know, I'm sure, that what Bill did, and he had a presentation that he made in 1948, which divided the North American continent, at least in Canada and the United States, into four quadrants. And we were going to gather in each of the quadrants and elect eight service representatives to be represented at the conference, which would be held in New York City. Well, Bill got some good advice on that, and he ditched that plan, and he came around to the plan which now is in place, the General Service Conference. In 1955, in St. Louis, Missouri, the 20th Annual Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous was convened. And at that time, that was the fifth year of the General Service Conference. And it was there that they passed a resolution. And you know, we don't pass resolutions at these annual conventions. So I don't know how they got by with that, but became a very important part of Alcoholics Anonymous. That they passed a resolution to make the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous the successor to Dr. Bob and Bill. And can you imagine what would happen if they had not passed it on to a group, supposing it had been left open and some individual would want to take over and be the successor to Bill or Dr. Bob or both? And actually, I think that was the salvation of Alcoholics Anonymous when he passed it on to the General Service Conference, because the General Service Conference of AA is us. We are the grassroots members who are gathered here today of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are the ones that tell our delegates through our structure what they're supposed to do when they get back there to New York and represent us. At least we give them an idea. We give them a certain amount of leeway as trusted servants. But we also let them know from our various districts and various groups and various whatever we've got in AA. And so then with that came the General Service Conference structure, the General Service Conference Charter. And Article 12, which is the last article of the General Service Conference Charter, are the warranties of AA. And for those of you who want to read it, you can read it in the Concept 12, which actually is a repetition that was written, approved 7 years later when the concepts were approved by the General Service Conference. And so we come to this thing of Warranty 1. The conference shall never become the seat of perilous wealth or power. Now, I will mention traditions, a couple of traditions as I talk about this, and that is Tradition 6. You recall talks about let's not have money or prestige or power divert us from our primary purpose. And really that ties into this warranty. So we don't want the conference ever to be the seat of perilous wealth or power, because obviously that would be getting us away from our primary purpose. And then Tradition 7, we are entirely self-supporting through our own contributions. And that's a guarantee that we'll never have too much money. You see, because not only does it say that we are self-supporting, but it also says that no AA member can give more than $1,000 a year to the World Service of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we're limited, and nobody can buy any power with $1,000 in this fellowship. We're too big for that. Then there comes warranty two. Sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve should be its prudent financial principle. And that ample reserve is usually thought of as 1 year's operating expense of all the general office services that we have, which with headquarters in New York City, but for all the things we're doing. At the present time, well, it was in 1993, the last reading I got on it, that the prudent reserve was a total of 11 months operating expense. So that 11 months, what it will do for us, it will give us a reserve so that if suddenly we have an economic recession in which the contributions will fall off, and it may or may not, because, you know, we're a funny bunch when we're a little more poor and we realize that some things have to be done. We might even raise more money if there's a recession, because that's the kind of people we are. But that would carry us through, because, you see, the sale of books would be diminished, and a lot of other things that we're supposed to, that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous would be lessened. But it would not be a catastrophe, and it would not be the end of the services of Alcoholics Anonymous as we know them now. And not only would it carry, could it carry us through 1 year of recession, but it could carry us through 2 or 3 or 4 years, so that we could get our feet and adjust all the services we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. Warranty 3 says that none of the conference members shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority over any of the others. And that very simply states that this warranty really means that we of AA will not tolerate absolute human authority in any form. Anybody have experience on that? And warranty 4, that all important decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible by substantial unanimity. That means that that much larger part of Alcoholics Anonymous will be in favor of the things we're going to do, if we're going to change a procedure or a policy or anything we've been doing for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And let me tell you a story about substantial unanimity. You know, it was in the very late 50s and the early 60s that Bill had this dream. See, in the beginning, before the General Service Board was formed, it was called the Alcoholic Foundation. And I think many of you know what a foundation is, at least most of the foundations we've heard of. Foundations are there to raise money, immense, huge sums of money. And that's what that handful of people, when they formed the foundation in 1938, and it was in the spring of 1938, they had this vision of sending missionaries around the world, you know, to recruit people for Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were going to have a big building or big buildings, and they would have educational facilities. They would have recovery facilities. They would have hospitals, anything we would need. So it would all be there to take care of us, whatever our need would be. And then the foundation, in the beginning, they decided, because they were going to raise a lot of money, and they were going to raise it from the public, they decided we should have some kind of a protection for the public, so they would know that our funds are not totally in the hands of a bunch of alcoholics. And so when they formed the foundation, they made a decision at that time that the number of non-alcoholics on this foundation would always be one more than the alcoholics. And just in case all the drunks got drunk at the same time, then non-alcoholics could carry on for us. But actually, that's not what they explained it as the reason. The reason was that just that we give the public confidence so they would know that the funds are not in the hands of a bunch of drunks. And we, you know, we can trust each other now, and I think the general public trusts us, and so these things are not in effect. And so Bill's dream was that one day would come when the number of alcoholics on the board would exceed the number of non-alcoholics. And he worked on this. And by 1966, it had risen to 21 members of the board. There were 11 non-alcoholics and 10 alcoholics. And Bill proposed a restructuring so that there would be 7 non-alcoholics and 14 alcoholics. And he had a big fight on his hand for several years. The board itself was very much against it. And then the General Service Conference members, when they talked about it, were very much against it. But then there came that day in 1966 at the annual meeting of the General Service Conference when it came time to vote. And the night before, we'd had a meeting of the delegates only, and there were voices raised. People were excited about this, and some people against it, and so strongly against it that, you know, they were willing to shoot one another, almost. But anyway, came the day, that was the night before, and there came the day, and I believe it was on a Thursday, and it was a Thursday afternoon. And they were counting out the votes as they were voting, and they were saying them, yes, 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 no. And then a bunch of yeses and very few no's, and it went that way until finally the final came in, and the vote was 78.4% of the votes were cast in favor of the change. And that is substantial unanimity. And they've found over the years since then that that was a wise decision, because we've done a pretty good job with our alcoholics around the country in the several regions and our trustees at large in Canada and the United States. We've been doing a pretty good job, but we still rely on the help of those people out there. We still have to be friendly with our friends. And these people have done marvelous things for Alcoholics Anonymous over the years. So one of Bill's greatest dreams had been fulfilled. And then what happened, and I was there. I was a delegate from the Washington area. And I was there, and it was a dramatic moment. And Herb Morse was the chairman of the meeting. He was the general manager of the AA World Services and all the services of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he got on the microphone and he said, and Bill W. was sitting in the back of the hall. And Herb said, Bill, is there anything you'd like to say? So Bill got up in front of the group. And he said, you know, he said, this is going to be the understatement of the century. Thanks. And he sat down. That's the shortest speech Bill ever made in his whole life. Warranty 5, that no conference action be personally punitive or in incitement to public controversy. You know, it seems to divide into two things. One is internal, within the fellowship, and the other is external, which would involve dealings with the public and dealings of litigation, going to court to stand up for our rights. See, Bill protected our good name, because when he was writing his books, the Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 and 12 and the other ones that he put together, he always took the protection of the law through copyrights and trademarks. And so this litigation is not necessarily a public controversy, at least it's not in my opinion. So he used the legal protection of the law, and I think that's one of the things we have to do in the future, is use the full protection of the law to protect our assets. See, one of the things we do know is that there could be a lawsuit. Well, let me start that over again. The General Service Board and directors and staff members of Alcoholics Anonymous have a legal obligation, as working for a non-profit organization, even the unpaid members of the board, they have a legal obligation. And by that legal obligation, if they don't protect the assets of their corporation, their non-profit organization, then they can be taken to court and sued. And I didn't know this until much later, but I found out that I had a job where I was on a board And I found out that I actually was could be responsible, held responsible, if I didn't do a good job. And therefore, we took the precaution of protecting ourselves with insurance. But in AA, we don't do that. I don't think we do anyway. I'm pretty sure we don't. But the thing was that the... let me give another example of litigation. And that's the litigation. There was a case that came up, and it was in about 1968. I was in the General Service Board of AA, and there was a group in California. And a lot of things start in California, all these crazy things, or in the northeast part of the continent, or northeast part of the United States. But anyway, these two fellas whose total initials added up to AAWS, and I think they had to scramble the initials a little bit to get it, and so they became the AAWS Publishing Company, and they used our name, which is protected by law. AAWS Incorporated is protection. That's one of our trademarks. And so when that happened, it came before the board, and what should we do? And the board decided that what we would do, we would instruct our attorneys to write letters to these people and ask them to cease and desist. No threats of litigation, no threats of taking them to court. And so they agreed that they would not do that anymore and they would change their name. But they didn't do it. They didn't keep their promise. So our next step was, okay, if you're going to insist on doing this, then we are going to take you to court. And just the threat of that did the trick. And I don't think we've initiated litigation in all our time in Alcoholics Anonymous. If we have, it's certainly been a minimum of one or two. But that's one of the things, that just the threat of that, so that we must retain, that is one of our obligations, is to maintain the right to protect our names, even if it means going to court for that protection. Now, the litigation... Warranty 6, that though the conference may act for the service of Alcoholics Anonymous, it shall never perform any acts of government. Now, I'm not on Warranty 6 yet. I'm on Warranty 5. That's on the public controversy thing. I'm supposed to tell you about something here, and I got to find out what my note says. Oh, yes. What did Bill say? Bill said something about litigation, that we should never take any action in anger, never any attack, no matter what happens. Supposing we were to have a deep rift in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, we should never take any action in anger or attack. And this is what Bill says about this warranty. He says, we have no doctrine that has to be maintained. We have no membership that has to be enlarged. We have no authority that has to be supported. We have no prestige, power, or pride that has to be satisfied. And we have no property or money that is worth quarreling about. These are advantages of which we should make the best possible use in the event of a threatened major division. We should take a calm and considered attitude of non-resistance. Now, we had a blow-up in the Empire Way group. This is just a small example of what could happen. This kind of thing could happen in Alcoholics Anonymous, the big body of Alcoholics Anonymous. But it happened in my group, in the Empire Way group in Seattle, where I was at that time. And it started with one of the younger members of the fellowship insulted the Al-Anon wife of one of our old-timers. And that was a mistake, but we could have survived that. But then right on the heels of that, another controversy came up, another fight took place within the fellowship of the Empire Way group. And nobody seems to remember what that fight was all about. That's how important it was. But somehow or other, the group just about diminished to a very small number of people, because we used to have meetings about 75, 80 people every week, and now all of a sudden we're down to 6. And it was six people who would not take part in any of the controversy, and we decided that what we had to do is just keep our meetings going. And so we did nothing in anger or attack. And pretty soon, after a few weeks, a couple of more members, some of the people went out and got drunk, some joined other groups, and some just disappeared from sight, and we don't know where they went to. But then out of all of this came the fact that we don't have to quarrel, we don't have to take any action, and the group began to grow, and at the end of 2 months we had 8 people, at the end of about 3 or 4 months we were getting up to 15, and within 2 years we were back to the old number of about 60 or 70 every week. So it was just a matter of following Bill's advice: no anger, no attack, don't take sides, just do your thing and follow the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and remember the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then there's Warranty 6, that though the conference may act for the service of Alcoholics Anonymous, it shall never perform any acts of government, and that like the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous which it serves, the conference itself will always remain democratic in thought and action. And that's good enough for me. And may God bless and keep you and Alcoholics Anonymous forever.
Thank you, Eric. That was wonderful. And now I'd like to introduce Diane from California. Diane?
My name's Diane, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Living in the Solution in San Mateo, California. And I'm currently holding down one of the best jobs in AA. I'm a rotated delegate. The only one you never get to rotate from is past delegate. Better? Okay. I've got to get over this shyness. I have a brief announcement for those of you who've lost track of time. The panel on sex, security, and society is beginning. And I'm stunned that there's still this many people in the room. I want to thank Phyllis and whoever was responsible for inviting me to be part of this panel. It is really unusual for me to feel slightly inadequate. I usually feel that I know at least as much as everyone else on the dais, if not more frequently. It's my opinion. It's not necessarily the truth, but I'm really astounded to be here. I suspect that the two gentlemen on the dais probably spilled more coffee in AA meetings than I ever drank alcohol. I was having some difficulty last night trying to explain to someone from my hometown who had no idea who, you know, a delegate, what's that. She thought I was a newcomer because she hadn't seen me at meetings. And my lack of humility overcame me, and so I had to point out to her that I was speaking at this convention today at a workshop on the warranties. And then, of course, she said, well, what are the warranties? And I found it very difficult in, 10 seconds in front of Jack Murphy Stadium to try to explain to someone who didn't know what general service was what the warranties are. I'm hoping that you all have much more background, and so especially now that Eric has told you what the warranties are, we can talk about it. One of the real difficulties, I think, with the warranties is that they come at the very end of the service manual. Now, I had been active in general service and was county chairperson before I realized that the service manual was written in English. I had been reading it for several years on those nights when I was having difficulty getting to sleep, because when I couldn't find my lease to read to put me to sleep, the service manual did the job for me. And somewhere after I had a few responsibilities in Alcoholics Anonymous and was desperately turning somewhere for aid and assistance, I opened the service manual one time and found out that it was in English, it made sense, and the answers were there. That is, of course, is the front half of the service manual. As someone said yesterday, that's the one that tells you all the titles that you can achieve. The last half of the book is what tells you to do once you have them. And the warranties being part of Concept 12 and part of the Article 12 of the Charter are at the very, very end of the book. I think Warranty 6, that ends, of course, with saying that the conference, like the society it serves, will always be democratic in thought and action, is one of those things that always makes me a bit tear up a bit. I tend not to be too sentimental. Having sat through area committee meetings and area assembly business meetings, one gets not sentimental about this fellowship. But overall, taking the long view, we are a remarkably loving and democratic fellowship, and it's largely because, I think, of these principles. It's very tempting to dismiss the warranties, because if you read them as they are written, they govern the conduct of the conference. These are the things that ensure that the conference will not sort of take off as it has been tempted to do, or some members of it have been tempted to do from time to time, and tell us all what to do. And the warranty is essentially that guarantee to the rest of us that if we let the conference structure do its work, that we will continue to have the voice and the reins in Alcoholics Anonymous, we being the members of the groups of Alcoholics Anonymous. And should it all work the way it is supposed to do, and should we all do our AA citizen part and take part in the service structure and elect GSRs to give some input to that and keep writing cards and letters to the GSO staff and collaring the trustees when they come to town for regional forums, then all of this will continue to work the way we all want it to, especially those who have the most difficult jobs as trusted servants. Trustees and delegates and GSO staff members are definitely not the people who want to run this organization. I think these people are desperately looking to the fellowship itself to take the reins and the control. In part, I think, because we're all fairly judgmental people and none of us wants to be blamed if it goes badly. Because the warranties govern the conference, and because the conference has worked so well for so many years, certainly in my home area, in California, Northern Coastal area, we take the way the conference works as our model for the way we should work. And my home group, when certain issues come up, we look to these things as our model for how we should behave. And so what's come to happen, certainly in Northern California, is that we take the principles within the warranties and all of the concepts of world service and use that to solve problems. We're saying to ourselves that it doesn't necessarily just apply to the conference. It applies to all of us. And it seems to me that the two warranties we pay the most attention to, and certainly the two that Bill paid the most attention to, if you look at his essays, are warranties 2 and 5, those having to do with money and controversy. Gee, what a surprise. Bill's essay on Concept 12 runs about 12 pages, and 8 pages of those 12 deal with Warranty 2 and Warranty 5. Those are the ones that I've certainly had the most experience with. At the 43rd General Service Conference, when we were debating litigation about the medallion and where in the year that we finally decided to stop protecting the circle and triangle so that all of us could have it on sobriety chips, you know, overriding principles being what they are, we had enormous amounts of debate about the exact wording in Bill's essay on Warranty 5 in terms of public controversy and litigation and exactly where the lines are drawn. And we're going back to the words of wisdom of our founder. I find some danger in many cases. The warranty itself, the warranties themselves and the concepts themselves are very clear and very specific on what our behavior ought to be and what the principles are. When we then have 5 pages of explanation written in the 50s as to what those 10 lines of words really mean. I think as alcoholics we tend to get into trouble. And I'm really concerned, is this, you know, where is Diane and all this? I'll tell you where I am. I'm really concerned, especially when we look at the essays. If you flip back a couple of pages in the service manual from looking at the explanation of the warranties, only a few pages back in Concept 11, we find the wisdom from our founders that says, for instance, that women workers are, of course, yet another problem. Because the General Service Office is, as it should be, of course, pretty much a man's world. Now, it's pretty apparent to all of us that the world has changed a great deal since that essay on Concept of 11 was written. But I'm not sure it's really apparent to all of us when we flip 4 pages forward and look at the essay on Warranty 5 that we're equally willing to admit that the world has changed. And that if Bill was concerned enough about litigation in 1955 or 60 or whenever he was writing these essays to write some wording about litigation, then we need to understand that in 1955 or 1960, in many cases, we could walk away from our homes and leave the doors unlocked, that our children weren't taking guns to school, and that there probably wasn't a lawyer on every corner willing to sue for anything. And so I think the world has changed, and the atmosphere around litigation has changed. The really important thing, I really support what Eric had to say in terms of litigation, that the trustees have a legal duty to protect this fellowship and are personally liable if they don't. And if that means that we have to sue or threaten to sue, then regardless of what the essay on Warranty 5 says, I think that we need to take our spirituality in our hands and pray for our lawyers and go ahead and sue, if that's what we have to do. When it comes to Warranty 2, what Bill says and what Eric said about Warranty 2 is that's our guarantee that we will never have too much money. And that's what Bill said when he wrote in his essay about it. 2 years ago at the conference, what I heard when I was sitting there was that in 3 or 4 or 5 years when we stop paying royalties to the Wilson heirs, we may have too much money. We may, in Alcoholics Anonymous, be facing the problem of what do? When we exceed the 1-year cap on the reserve fund and the money keeps rolling in and we keep cutting expenses and people keep buying literature and we keep, unfortunately, getting new members. Wouldn't it be wonderful if membership declined because nobody needed us anymore? Wouldn't that be terrific? And what I hope that we begin to do in my home group and in my area is to begin to consider what Alcoholics Anonymous ought to do if we have too much money in the reserve fund and how we ought to be looking differently at spending our money instead of conserving our money and what new services we can perform instead of what new services we can cut. And as we go about having those discussions, I need to be discussing with the other members of my home group and within my own area what all of the warranties are about in terms of how we frame the questions and in terms of how we assure ourselves that we are, above all, a spiritual and democratic body. That decisions about money and litigation and services should be made with substantial unanimity, with discussion and vote, and out of the principle that this fellowship is here by and for us, and that there are no real leaders. The leaders in my home group are the woman who's been sober for 14 years, who told a newcomer she couldn't be treasurer because she had already served one term and our principles were that we rotate. That's a very difficult thing to do in a group of 25 people. It's one thing to stand up in front of a group of you and expound forever about rotation. It's very different in a little, tiny home group where everybody knows your name and has your home phone number. To stand up for the principle. And the leaders in my world of AA are the people who do it quietly in groups and not necessarily the people who do it with microphones in their hands. And I think that in many ways that's what the warranties tell us. That each of us takes these things to heart and we take them home. And at night before I go to bed, when I think about what I'm going to do, a service to AA tomorrow, I also have to remember what AA is. And it is the collective conscience of all of us and our individual and personal guarantees to each other that what we all think is more important than what any one of us thinks. That's certainly what the warranties mean to me, and I hope I've made some sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. It's really beautiful. And now we have a gentleman who has been around for a long time and whom I think we are all really looking forward to hearing. Whaley Searcy W., please come to the mic.
Well, she's already broken my anonymity. I don't have much to say. My name is Searcy, and I'm an alcoholic. Believe it or not, I am the adult alcoholic child of non-alcoholics. My sobriety date, well, I put it in short. I've been sober 18 days, 1 month, and 49 years. Yeah, sure. We got a lot to talk about, and we only, they gave me an hour and a half, and I'm going to try to cut back some. I'm sure you don't mind. Well, we're going to talk about the warranties. We're going to talk about this and that and the other. And I don't know a hell of a lot about the warranties. I know we're in good hands. And I know how we got the warranties. And I know how we got the 12 traditions. And I know how we got the 12 steps. So maybe we'll talk about that. And they're all woven together, right? You can't separate them. There's no way to separate them. They have been selected on this panel. They wrote me a letter first from the General Service Office, I think from the Warranties Division. And they said, we want you to, the topic, they made a mistake at first. They said the topic is going to be sex, society, and sobriety. But you cannot use any four-letter words. And the only ones I could think of regarding that was N-O-N-E. At my age, you know, nothing matters a lot except medicine, science, and society. And I have very little of that. I think we need to go back and how the grace of God, how this thing started and how we came to need the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the 6 warranties and the concepts and how did we come to need, because we're alcoholics and because we need a way to get sober, right? And so we found that in they researched every known method in God's world to find not moderation drinking, but how to not drink for the alcoholic. And none of them failed. A lady French society said 2,000 years ago, I see in this kind of drinking that we did a malady or a disease or an illness like any other disease. And I see more symptoms in this disease than any other illness. And we've got those symptoms, haven't we? Resentment, fear, anger, all those things. I gotta introduce a guy that came the furthest, I believe, than anybody. And he's always called me on my birthday, and he means the hell right from London, England, old Kevin. Look at this. Stand up, Kevin. He comes to Texas to the Lone Star, that's the cowboy roundup. Show him your hat, Kevin, will you? Now you're talking. Well, let's go. I was raised on a farm out in West Texas in a barren area. I tell you, it was so dry, everything was a fire hazard. Everything was a fire hazard. And I didn't like that farm at all, but I found out that I needed to drink a little to lighten the load of that cotton sack I was pulling around. You know, I was pulling cotton, picking cotton, and chopping cotton. And I needed to drink to lighten the load. And I found out you could make the stuff and ferment the chili and avocados and all that stuff and ferment it and it'd make it rough. And I know you never had it. I don't see any of those kind of faces here. But there are a few of them. And so I became needing alcohol. And so I sought out, I followed the alcohol path. And I kept on drinking. I went and played a little professional, semi-professional baseball out in the old West Texas League and things like that. And we'd drink, make homebrew and all that stuff. And the reason I'm saying this is here's how we become an alcoholic and then why these things are necessary that we're talking about today. We had a baseball manager out in Midland, Texas that was our baseball manager. And he also had a funeral home. Now, that's a hell of a combination, isn't it? Every night, Sunday night, after the baseball game, we'd gather and drink home brew at the funeral parlor. And we had one guy that was a sorry drinker. He'd drink two or three home brews and pass out. So we'll fix him. So this night, he passed out after a couple of home brews, and we dressed him up and put him in a casket. And rolled him back in there and said, well, let's wait and see if he sobers up and then or see where he is and see what happened. And so finally we were looking in there and he began to move a little. And then he raised up and he fell to the casket and he fell to himself. And I said, you know, if I'm not dead, why am I here? And if I am dead, why have I got to go to the bathroom? Good alcoholic reasoning, you know. You figure these things out. I kept drinking and adding alcohol. And, you know, if you have those X factors in your life and you add alcohol to it long enough, you may become a compulsive pathological drinker. And that's what I was beginning to do. And so I had to have alcohol. And then I took the geographical cure when I developed alcoholism. You know what the geographical cure is, or that unlawful flight to avoid prosecution. Well, we went to Corpus Christi, and I saw some people here from Corpus Christi and everywhere, and that didn't work. The trouble is with the geographical cure is that when you get there, there you are. If you could leave that guy back where he came from, you know, it might work. Okay, in the early, in 1946, I sobered up in Dallas, Texas. And in May 1946, and in November we had a state conference. We had a great big state convention down in Austin, Texas, and 25 of us showed up. And Bill Wilson and Lois came. And we visited and talked, and I fell in love with the guy. You know, everybody came to see how Bill's wings flopped, you know, and they did flop. For some reason, and I have no idea why, and I can't tell you, and I don't care, but Bill and I had some kind of an intimate relationship. And I talked with a guy out here today, and he said, like Bill told me one time, I wish you'd just be a regular AA. I need a pal. I need a pal. And I said, well, you got it. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. If he'd have said, jump off to Bill, I'll do that. Whatever. He was kind of God to me, you know. But anyhow, my wife and I went to Stepping Stone, Bill and Lois, and we were always at ease, and we always talked about the things that were not of the routine. We had a lot of problems in the General Service Office, and we had with our local groups, and problem. I said, hell, let's don't talk about that. Let's talk about staying sober. And we'd talk about that. And somehow our relationship grew. And then in 1948, Bill came to Texas. The reason I'm putting this in is so you'll see how why and how wrong I was, and how misconception we can be in our attitude about these things that happen. Bill and Lois came to Texas, and we had a great big meeting by then. This is 1948. And we had about 75 people gathered in Lubbock, Texas, to hear Bill and Lois and see them. And we met him in Amarillo, and they got off the plane, and we got on another plane and went to Lubbock. And Bill reached in his pocket and pulled out some handwritten notes, and I still have those notes. And he said, I want you to read these and see what you think about it. And he had told me that he wanted to come to Texas because he had something he wanted to sell us. And I said, well, that sounds right. I read these notes that he had written, and I handed them back, and I said, Bill, this is all right for you guys up there. I can understand you're fighting and not getting along, but we don't have any problem down here. We love each other. Oh, God. Do we love each other? And what it was the 12 traditions that he had written out. And to try to tell us about why we needed them. And I didn't see it. Aren't you glad I didn't put this thing together? Well, we had the meeting, and Bill explained why we need these 12 traditions. If we are going to survive, look, I said, how do you know this, Bill? And he said, we looked, I researched every known method we have had to help the alcoholic stay sober, and none of them worked because they got into things besides what they were intended for. They got into politics and religion and everything besides our primary purpose, which is to stay sober and help somebody else stay sober, period. And they folded. He said, so we need something that will hold us together forever, and that nothing will ever happen to this great society and this way of getting sober and staying sober. And I said, work on it, baby. Work on it. And he worked on it, day and night. He was concerned. In fact, John and I say, he was worried sick. And so then, anyhow, 1950, while we gathered in Cleveland, at the first international conference, and I've been to all 10 of them. This is my 10th one, the international conference. And the first one, Dr. Bob, that was my only real long visit with Dr. Bob. I spent many, many days and hours and weeks and months and years with Bill. But Dr. Bob and Bill and I went up in Cleveland, in the Cleveland Hotel, and we sat down to map out our strategy in getting this thing passed, which I didn't think we needed it, really. You know, we were getting along so well. And they sat down and we went through it, the strategy of we're going to vote on this thing this afternoon. And we got to make sure that it passes. I couldn't understand why there was so much hullabaloo about getting it passed, but Bill said it was, and Bob said it was. And so anyhow, that afternoon, when we voted on the traditions to accept, it wasn't a resolution, it was a vote. And we voted, and there was not one dissenting vote. Not one in the whole 15 or 20,000 that was in that auditorium. Everybody voted for it, and that's what saved us. So help me God, that's what saved us. That's very wonderful. Why do we need the 12 traditions? Because we need, and we, by experience of the past, we know that if we get into things beside our primary purpose, we will perish. All right? Then, because we need the 12 traditions and these things came along that Bill was so concerned about, and I went with him many times, and we'd go up to his little study there at Stepping Stone. And I always thought that, do your thinking. Don't bother with me. Do your thinking. I want you to think this thing out, because it needs a lot of thinking. And he said, that's fine. I feel relaxed around you, and I want to be that way. And he would think then, and I'd say, what did you come up with? And we'd talk about it. And he was so concerned about a lot of these things and deeply depressed about the future of AA and how we preserve it, and why then do we need to have like the warranties. And you know, a warranty is when you get into these, warranties come from, you first have a promise. And you first have an idea, and then a promise. And then you have an idea, then the idea goes into something. And then how do you keep that idea? How do you promote it? You keep working on it. And then you have to preserve it some way. So we warrant it. And then if you want to go on out, guarantee it. You know what? We talked that, if you don't believe it, I'll give you an Oklahoma guarantee. What's that? I'll be a son of a gun for no. That's an Oklahoma guarantee. So, we had to have some way to guarantee these problems that exist because of any institution that grows and grows and grows. And that's good. There's got to be some way to preserve it. And there are all kinds of foul things on the outside to distract us from our primary purpose. There are all kinds of side roads that we have to get off on. How are we going to handle money? How are we going to have money? How are we going to handle people? We're not supposed to. That's not our business. Our business is stay sober. So this is boggles the mind, you know. What the hell, you don't have any authority, but you got to authorize these things to be done. How you do, you know? So you come to the conclusion that the only way, and Bill did it that way. The sunlight of the Spirit shone in on all of these things. And that's when the success came in, was when God entered the picture and when our higher power came into being, and that He is the authority. He is the bottom line. He is what happened. And the conscience of the group and the whole fellowship is borne out in the fact that finally we turn it over to God as we understand God, and it works. Isn't it beautiful? Absolutely beautiful. But we want to do it ourselves. And we say, what the hell is democratic? You know, what is democracy? And democracy is for each of us to think individually or as a group or as a whole our own way, but then let's all come together. We don't need factions. We don't need factions in AA. There's a faction here that wants to say this and a faction that this. But then what we need to do is have unity and all come together, and then it works. You know why? Because in the end and the bottom line is that we have to stay sober first. And if we stay sober, then we can handle it. And if we follow our group conscience and our individual consciousness, and we follow the directions of the power greater than ourselves, it all comes out real good. When we try to do it ourselves, when you say, this I dictate, this I want, this it has to be done. Well, anyhow, at 19 we got the traditions passed, and then things happened. In 1953, the reason I think this is important is because it's part of it. And in 1953, Bill, another trip to Texas, and by that time he had talked me in, and I'd gone to work with Dr. Jelinek for the Yale Institute on Alcohol Studies, and we were spreading the disease all over the country. And Dr. Jelinek became ill. I worked with him for a long while, and he became ill, and he said, the greatest thing we need for the alcoholic in this whole area is a place for the alcoholic to go and sober up and go into AA. And we need hospitals. There was not one hospital in the whole area that would take an alcoholic as an alcoholic. They'd take you with a liver problem or a kidney stone or anything else, but an alcoholic, no. So we established some Yale Plan hospitals. Four of them. Now you know I'm crazy. And in the meantime, Bill came back to Texas with a heavy heart. And he had all of these things. The problems came up of money and how are we going to raise money to keep the general service off. How are we going to raise... And, you know, we're a bunch of rich people. I read somewhere in here where our income of this, the people here in this income, is over $1 billion a day. And we're the tightest people in the world to get sober. We'll go to a bar and throw it up and down the counter any way anybody wants it anyhow, but we have to put that $3 in the hat to take care of the general service of it. We feel around, see if we can't find a $1 bill. And... So the idea, the first idea of how do we find we're not getting enough money, the group would, then we had the birthday plan. You know, old Abshire in Tulsa, Oklahoma said, this works in Oklahoma. They did $3 each per year for their birthday, up to 10 years and then so much and all. But it made an easy way to do it, and they had money and decided to send the general service office. But because it was a birthday plan, and then that worked for a while. And then what would happen was we were supposed to pay $3 per year per person a certain amount of years. Well, our group would report, we'd have 500 in the group, and we'd report 200 of them. That's the way to cheat AA. You know... Just don't throw it all out there at once by no other we can trust them or not. And so these things come, and our warranties, though, they come along, and Bill's concerned about our warranties and how we can trust those people in the general service. No authority, but they need to do things, and we need to give them authority to do things, but they don't have any. How are you going to do it? You know, it's a screwed up situation. But it works. It works beautifully. And we trust those people up there, and do they ever do a beautiful job? If you don't believe it, go up there and see it. It's the most beautiful job in the world. And they preserve all of these things that are in our warranties. They follow them the best they can. And things just work beautifully. We've got the greatest fellowship, and we've got the greatest way to keep it that way the rest of our lives in any fellowship that ever existed. So help me God. Well, in 1953, Bill came to Dallas, and by that time we had the clinics, the hospitals operating, and drunks were coming from all over the country. They had no place to go, so they'd come to sober up. Nobody had any money, but they'd sober up. They'd give a note, you know, or a cold check or whatever, anyway. And Bill came to Dallas, and I asked Bill, we were sitting in the Melrose Hotel one day, and I said, Bill, what would you rather see happen than anything that's ever happened in AA? AA is 11 years old then. And without any hesitation, he said, I'd rather see Abby have a chance to get sober than anything I know of. Now Abby had, as you know, gone and given Bill the message that Bill really got, and Abby was Bill's sponsor from then on. But after then, and after the Oxford movement, Abby went back down on the Bowery and stayed drunk until then. So, in other words, Bill pointed to me and he said, I wish you'd sober Abby up. Woo! And so we finally got Abby and moved him down to Dallas and got him sober. And let's straighten out, you pick this message where Abby stayed sober three, and the reason I know I was there, he stayed sober 3.5 years, he got drunk, stayed sober 4.5 years, stayed 5 years, and got drunk, but he helped a lot of people. And when he was, in 1966, he had moved up to New York, and Bill got him a place up there, as you know the story, and he was sober 2.5 years when he died. And you can say whatever you want to, but that's success. One of our warranties should be that those who don't make it, the first, second, third, or if never, let's not forget and give up on it. Nobody is hopeless and helpless. I don't care how long you've been trying. We have a lesson from what happens when we go back and try to help somebody that doesn't make it. And that's very important to me. I think our whole concept of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, our 12 traditions and our warranties and all the concept, everything has to do with the bottom line, and that is to stay sober. Help somebody else stay sober, right? There's no other bottom line. There's not any. So, I've witnessed these things that make me know. Last night, that flag ceremony. How many countries? 187. March in there, and 80, I don't know how many people in each one of the under each one of those flags are sober, but we've got 2.5 or 3 or 4 because we don't report all of them on account of the money. But we've got a hell of a lot of drunks sober, and that's the bottom line. That's the bottom. We can go. I remember so well how these things developed. And I was there, is the reason I know. Right after Abby got sober, Bill came to the state conference in Texas. And old Abby sat up on the stage with Bill, sober. He'd been drunk 14 years. And there he was sober, sitting with old Bill just smiling. And that you talk about the warranties. That's the greatest thing that warranted Bill's belief that AA works. That was the proof. Because then in 1950, old Abby in 55 went to St. Louis, and that's when we voted and accepted. We turned this over to us. It's our baby. What are we going to do with it? Are we going to preserve the 12 steps? Are we going to preserve the 12 traditions? Are we going to preserve the 6 warranties? The 12 concepts, you better believe, if we want to stay sober and we want to exist, we better preserve it, right? So, these things, I never shall forget then in 1960 in Long Beach, Bill told me, he said, let's not try to visit until after the conference, and we'll have dinner on Sunday evening. And we went down with Sister Ignatia and Lois and Bill and myself to talk about these things and what happened and how they happened and why they happened. And it was the greatest spiritual experience I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous, to listen and to be able to question Sister Ignatia about her feelings about how our spiritual progress was made and how she gave that to Bill, those things that were so important. And I listened. We went there. We had dinner at 7 o'clock, and at 12 we were still in there talking about the necessity of doing these things to preserve the thing that saved our lives, right? So we got to hold on to it. There is no way that I can express my total belief and that my total life is because of you people who showed me the way on a daily basis, and the commitment that I make on a daily basis for 24 hours to stay sober. I've never stayed sober longer than 24 hours, and I've done that for 49 years. So I think it works, and I think I'll keep... But the bottom line, too, in all of this is what old Albert Schweitzer said. One thing I know, the only ones among you who will be really happy are those of you who have sought and found how to serve. And that's the bottom line. If we, whatever you told old Bill that day, Bill asked him, what do you do? He said, we trust God and clean house. And we had all the writings and all the literatures and all the 12 steps and all the traditions and all the warranties and all the concepts. But the bottom line is just a couple of words. Just trust God, clean house. Daily. On a daily basis. Right? If and when each of us finds a higher power greater than ourselves with whom we are comfortable, then we've got a better chance to help somebody else, because we can carry the message of hope and the message that it works and the message that with proof that it works. So an old song that a good friend of mine in Snapford, Texas, Stuart Hamlin, he died and he was in AA sometime before. He wrote a lot of songs, spiritual songs. And the one that I loved most, and I thought he wrote for AA, and I told him so, was, it is no secret what God can do. And the last verse of that is, there is no night, for in his light we'll never walk alone. We'll always feel at home wherever you may roam. There is no power can conquer you while God is on your side. Just take him in his promise, don't run away and hide. It is no secret what God can do. What he's done for others, he'll do for you. With arms wide open, he'll pardon you. It is no secret what God can do. And I have no doubt that as we travel this road to our happy destiny, that every single one of us here will be sober and happy, and that we'll meet again somewhere down the road, somewhere, somehow. God bless you.